Hey, look at that. Here's the question. Hopefully this doesn't deafen you.
Oh, daddy. It's got buttons.
You heard that?
Yep.
Put that coffee down.
My coffee, so, damn it.
Just super old men that just finally figured out how to fix their computers after, what, 4 months? I switched my microphone side. I have 2 monitors. This is just like a completely different world here.
Sweet.
Did you rearrange your desk?
I did. I cleaned it, and it's already starting to get chaotic again.
I want to rearrange my desk.
One monitor, which is just kind of blasphemy for, I mean, going back to when I worked in university, like we always had two, like you reference something and you're drawing on something, you know, like 2 monitors. And we've had these just like monitors laying around. I haven't set them up. So I finally got 2 little arms up. I've got 1 vertical on the left, 1 in front of me, and I feel whole again.
Tegan, do you have your laptop on your desk? When you say one monitor, did you still have your laptop screen, or was that packed away?
Laptop is a home thing.
Oh, that's right.
So I use that Mac Studio here, desktop computer.
You were a single screen guy for a while. Interesting. Yeah,
it's kind of an accident. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know why. I don't remember how that happened. It just did, and I just was doing it for a long time, primarily because I didn't have another way to like mount the other thing, and I was like, oh, for $80, I can put another monitor up on a stand, a little arm. I'll send you a photo. Looks pretty cool.
Cool. Please do. Send me
I enjoy it.
Inspire me to take the morning off and redo my desk. I love doing that stuff.
It's been so long since we used these that...
And now, from a horse trailer from his backyard... Jim.
It's not accurate, but, you know, just had to use it. I think the horse trailer's been retired for podcast uses.
Yeah, it was retired for some. Too hot in a hot box.
Covered in flies and... Do you go in there and there's just, like, those giant spiders sometimes that you guys have?
Sometimes, yeah. We have those giant spiders.
Oh, God. You just keep that to yourself.
I'm not a fan of spiders.
Oh, my God. You live in the wrong place for that, right?
Yeah, I grew up in a house that didn't have any form of like insect screens on the windows at all. Oh. So I don't know. Oh. I shouldn't be I think I'm just traumatized, and that's why I'm scared of them now. But
right.
I just printed this gear track for
PS2.
Someone on Instagram who reached out. I was like, "Can you machine this out of brass?"
Oh, I saw that comment.
Yeah, technically. Could, but let's print it first. And it's the first time I've ever used maximum resolution on the bamboo, and it's gosh.
What's that setting at?
I don't know. I don't. I just
08 or something like that.
Yeah. Oh wait. I just dial in the settings and press go. Yeah, it's 08 layer height. High quality.
I don't think I have, honestly.
And it's delicious. Part looks fantastic.
Let me show you what I printed.
Did my coffee.
We're gonna have to go to the YouTube to watch this, guys.
Ooh, hello, baby Yoda.
I think it's the real one. It's full grown Yoda. So this had supports, and they came off so dang nice. Maybe my one.
What's the science between good support? Ooh, good support release. I think that's a.
The spacing, the amount of how much it touches. I mean, if you're really getting fancy, you do a different material. So supposedly if you're doing PETG, PLA is a good interface for that interface layer. And then I think vice versa, that works too, but they obviously sell these like fancy specific support interface materials that are very expensive. I don't know. We try as hard as we can to not use support. So these were just for fun.
Same.
That's a cool gear though. I haven't gone that detailed before.
Yeah, it's pretty fine. It's for a large format camera that he's building from scratch. As someone who has a large format camera and was once upon a time a user of such things, I couldn't help myself but say, yeah, I'll help. Oh, sounds fun.
Right. Cool. I was going to say, related to it just struck me. A friend told me this recently, and I've been using it, that you want to use, what's the right way to say it? With bamboo printers, they seemingly like relate to the steppers or the way they move. In Z steps, you want to do 0.04 increments, 0.04 millimeters. So 0.2, 0.16, 0.12.
Okay.
Follow? 0.08. This
is, yeah.
You don't want to do like 0.17.
You want to use the increment of the machine, sort of.
I think so, yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. What was that number?
Doing
what
that.
Was that factor?
0.04.
Okay, good to know.
Didn't think we were going to start off hot on printers, but here we are.
Here we are. So I guess we're both, sir. Are we both developing software now? Software. Mine's not software. Yours is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's coming soon. We'll have a little.
How did this happen?
Release to the show here, but we're getting close to a thing I've been working on for a while. That's part of why I've been working so much with Cursor and making a software project. So,
pretty cool. I was had a little bit of time yesterday. I was going round and round in circles with my old friends. It's been ages since I've worked on the configurator, so I spun up my old conversations and started some new ones with, you know, various forms of. Chatty, OpenAI, Sonnet, tried the DeepSeek one, and I was just going round and round in circles, not making any progress, and it was just I was going backwards, actually. My code was getting worse as it was trying to make changes, and then I thought of you and Cursor,
hey.
And I was like thought of. maybe now's the time, so I downloaded Cursor, and like within half an hour I'd made progress again, like it just launched me back into a productive state. Seems really good
for a week. Yeah,
sure. I'm sure I'll hit roadblocks in no time, but right now I'm very happy to be in Cursor, and the workflow is so much better than like what I was previously doing with the copying and pasting of little snippets and stuffing it up constantly, and yeah, it's awesome.
Contextually, it's just so beautiful. I just saw I don't remember what it was where I saw it, but a video, short video about how Cursor is currently being valued at $2.5 billion, and they supposedly actually make over $100 million of revenue, which is also kind of wild to me. I didn't realize it's been out that long, because I pay $20 a month. I think they have higher versions, levels, and then you can like pay a la carte for different features too, and some of them are fairly costly, like code review can be hundreds of dollars to do like a full, it's way more thorough, which is great. But what's interesting to me about that valuation, because now we're a startup podcast, is they
let Cursor me just write bro on my forehead in a Sharpie. One sec.
Sure. You just need like a surfboard behind you on the wall, with, especially with that hoodie. Hey, you want to come down to the bay and surf, bro? I can't even do the voice. Okay, let me start over. Cursor is a forked version of VS Code, meaning that's an open source software. They've changed the UI. They've added in AI models to it. They have their own kind of special sauce to some degree. But like, isn't that kind of insane? They just basically reskinned and added AI to an open source piece of software. And they're valued at $2.5 billion.
Winamp could only dream of such a evaluation.
Do you have that?
Winamp. It really whips the llama's ass.
The world of software. I went on a little bit of a Reddit deep dive last night because I follow like some of the sort of AI coding subreddits, and I logged on and I noticed a few posts that caught my interest, having just used Cursor for the first time that afternoon. And there's a bunch of stuff about people talking about, you know, best practice with, you know, what's it called? This like co-pilot coding mode where you like coding buddy. I can't remember the word for it. where you're coding with a bot.
The thing they keep hearing is agent something, agentic.
Oh, okay.
This?
I'm thinking of a different
term.
The
new phrase that all the
agentic,
people are talking about.
This is not agentic yet, but anyway.
Copilot's the Microsoft product. Microsoft thing.
Yeah.
I haven't tried it.
There was a bunch of various people sort of saying, you know, you should limit the code, the files that you're working on to sort of max 300 lines for context reasons and stuff. And I was like, I'm blown four times past that right now in my little dodgy HTML file where I'm making this configurator. But you're in a different class to me. You're doing multi-file cool stuff. I was wondering whether you had any thoughts about that.
What language is it? Python?
I'm just in HTML.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
GeoCities, baby.
So you should ask Cursor, like, hey, if you had... what's amazing is if you set it to, like, the latest Claude, it's really good for that, like, kind of conceptual rework kind of ideas where it's like, hey, could I make this more performant, or are there better standard practices to make this a better web app? I'm trying to do this with it. Here's where I've gotten to, you know, for now. It'll just do some wild stuff and, like, make new files for you. And what I've kind of learned through what we're working on is you often pull out functions that you can use outside of one page, so the function can be used other places, which in your case, I don't know that that's very useful, because you're probably just going to have one page for this thing. Yeah. It's like embedded, but and there's all this like stuff about how stuff loads, and don't overload, don't load things you don't need, and I don't really know what I'm talking about.
It's a whole world. It's pretty cool. I still find it so empowering just being able to dip my toe into this world at all. God,
it's amazing. It's
a beautiful feeling.
Well, like I was saying last show, it's just being able to make the simplest scripts to enable, like, I view it now as the way I'm thinking about it around the shop. It's like this, having something like Cursor where I can work through a problem we're having, both in like a concept and just plain dumb person language. I want to print labels more efficiently. How can I do that? It's a Windows thing. Here's the printer I have, and it just writes the script for me, you know. And if it doesn't work, as everybody knows, you just keep reworking that until it does. And it's like, that's pretty lean in my world. Like, I don't have to talk to anybody else. I'm not sending it out and have it come back, and they don't understand the context of our shop. Like, I think it's just going to keep getting better in that regard, and being able to, like, have the agentic thing is really interesting in that, like, hopefully, and like GPT just came out with tasks, which is like the most basic form of this agent idea, where you don't have to be sitting in front of it for it to do something, which we, you know, a lot of other services, we have that with Zapier, or, you know, automation inside Airtable, or if this and that. Like, that's not a new concept, but that, like, we can hopefully give it more context, and it can be more acting as your agent, I guess. I was going to say slave, but not really the right phrase. Yeah, I'm excited about that.
Yeah, me too.
My turn. So, to catch up from last week, we are attempting, and I actually have the part in front of me because I'm trying to work on it. We're improving the way we drill out this sideboard hole for how the dust boot plate clamps to the spindle. And we had kind of hand drill jigs that worked for literally years. And it was very, like, it's based on Ricky's skill, basically, of how well he could pull that off. And what we found was our drill bushing had grown over time. It was way larger than it should have been. We were using larger drill bit than I thought we were, because the drill wasn't straight. So we were using like a 280 some drill, and it was supposed to be 265. So all of that was just like a disaster. And I changed the design. Thus, we needed a new way to drill the hole because the jig didn't work. I tried to make a new one. It sucked, fell apart, wasn't self-centering. So all that kind of came back around to we're kind of going back, you know, all around, how can we do this better? If we step back, like, do we want to do this with a hand drill? And like, we got all those tips on Instagram. And I ended up buying one of these really adorable little Zindian, I don't know how to say it, Zindian self-centering vices. And it's about 3 inches long at its max dimension. And we'll put some soft jaws on it. And what we've come to is, instead of hand drilling, I think I'm just going to buy a drill press and dedicate it to just this.
Cool.
Because the problem with drill presses to me, and the way we've never really used them reliably, is every time you have to adjust it, everything goes out of whack, at least in the ones we have. So I'm just going to set it up, and we're going to have some big do not freaking touch me signs for anything other than drilling these parts. And it feels crazy to some regard that it would only be used for one product and a very, you know, maybe once a week, maybe every couple of weeks, but like it's our, one of our top selling products. And for now it's an easy solution. Like
yeah, I think
drill presses
great.
For like nothing.
How much is a drill press?
The one I like right now on Marketplace is $200. So nice. I was going to spend that money on precision rods or extrusions and then trying to like carry drill up and down on it. And I was like, you know what does so much, this?
So, yeah, so much stuff in your hands.
More accurately. So I don't know. It's good progress. I've been thinking about trying to, you know, definitely overcomplicating my life by thinking about trying to do what Grimsma did recently and like kind of film my process of solving the problem and making it into a video, mostly because that interests me more than solving the problem. But I also think it'd make a good video.
Speaking of using, well, no, first I'd like to see that video if you can be bothered making it. I've tried to make those sorts of videos and I just really struggle these days.
So hard.
To actually bother documenting something.
No, you've been making a bunch, just not long form.
Let alone actually getting to editing a long form video like that.
Right.
But speaking of drill press modifications or inappropriate use, I was driving back from, I did a day on site in Melbourne the other day, I was driving back. And we've discovered a problem with our hot wax treatment is affecting part strength. And it's not...
Oh, wow.
It's not like, oh, shit, drop everything. We have to change this right now. But it's like, this isn't ideal. Let's work towards a solution and change reasonably promptly. But basically, the heat seems to be, affecting... the strength of the parts. And so if you over torque the two dowels that, you know, come together over a shelf at the moment, if you really get your climbing fists into them and over torque it, it splits the female dowel. Like if the thread's okay, it's actually splitting the bore
open to
the side of the part. So we're trying to do something about that. Anyway, I was chatting to, probably advanced voice mode and ChatGPT app on the way home and workshopping some new barrel finishing ideas because I've seen barrel finishing done on small parts. So we're doing abrasive barrel tumbling at the moment to sand components. But there's also another process which is very similar, which is barrel finishing, where like if you imagine wooden beads, beautifully glossy little timber beads, and imagine how they paint those, done in a tumbler. A vibratory tumbler with some wax and some pigment, and the beads just bounce around in there and basically rub up against each other so much that they become beautifully colored little glossy objects with a bit of pigment and a bit of resin or wax in the mix. So I was thinking about how I can make a barrel finisher, and I don't want to tie up the lathe any more than it's already tied up. Because we're just using the old metal lathe as the tumbler platform at the moment and the drive for it. And I was looking at our old drill press, which sits in a corner doing nothing. And I was like, maybe I could just turn the whole, like it's a big floor standing pedestal drill press, Maybe I could just turn that horizontally and like mount a big barrel just in the chuck.
Right.
So I think
How do you know that the heat is the problem?
Because unheat treated timber, I can't overtorque and break. Like I can't
overtorque. It's not the amount of finish on it. Does that matter? I mean, I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Like, is it oversaturated somehow, or I don't really know.
Maybe, but you kind of, that's the tricky balance with that process is you have to get it hot enough that it flash dries when it comes out. If you don't let it come to full temperature when it comes out, it's really waxy. Like the wax sets on the outside of the part. It's too thick and cool.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to get it to a high temp, which means full penetration of the wax. I think it's just dehydrating the timber too far. Like it's already kiln dried timber, but then it's, I don't know, seems to be affecting it, which is a bummer.
First thought was you need a robot.
Yeah, always.
I kind of meant, well, are you doing everything or just the little end cappy bits in this? Everything waxed this way?
Everything.
Oh. That's a little trickier, but I did think of a process where you could take a cobot, I guess is the right phrase, a cobot, yeah. And like twist them basically, and then you could flip it over and twist the other side, and then I was thinking little end cap pieces, so
gotcha.
You could do both.
Yeah, I mean,
the tumbling is interesting.
Like the whole abrasive tumbling, but also the wax dipping has been such a massive time saver for those feet and caps, those small components.
Oh, no kidding.
I really don't want to move away from that. And that's why, rather than going back to spraying them all, like, no, there's got to be a better way that doesn't use heat. So I'll look at barrel finishing, do some tests, see how it comes out. So I think that drill press was actually...
Same idea. Like, is there another dipping method that doesn't involve heat? Like a big tray.
Yeah, totally. You could dip in like a thin oil, like a Danish oil or something like that.
Just have them drip dry, back down a tray into the thing.
Tumble dry, yeah, container. Potentially.
Fun. That sucks. I mean, I can imagine the frustration of gone to finding and solving that problem with the hot wax, and now it's like that's not the solution, you know, like backing away from it and trying to find a new thing when you feel like you've solved it.
Yeah, like I've solved it. Yeah, I don't know, it just feels like part and parcel of experimenting with this stuff.
Yeah, right.
Like you try stuff, sometimes it doesn't work.
Right.
Well, we got to a point where we're like, wow, this is working, this is fantastic. And then we're like, oh, it's not, you know, it's 80% of where we want it to be. Like the surface finish isn't quite as nice as we'd like. Started thinking about how we can improve the formula and blah, blah, blah. And then we've run up against this more pressing issue. So, yeah.
Right.
I don't know. It's part of trying stuff, I guess. The next set of experiments is doing, like, ages ago now, I came across this amazing video on YouTube of a Japanese pool cue manufacturing factory. You know, one of these like process YouTube factory tour videos where it shows how something's made. And there's a little clip in that video, which I've watched so many times, where this guy's coating, like putting clear coat on a pool cue. And it's the most janky little like cardboard box fixture. It's held together with masking tape, and the process is just so perfect that I've emulated it, and it looked John was laughing at me across the shop because my test was like a tube with a table tennis rubber like zip tied to the top of it with a hole cut out of the table tennis rubber, and it just looked like some disgusting homemade sex toy. And I was like pushing the dowel through it, and clear coat was kind of spurting out as I was doing it, and all over my hands. And the tests came out really well.
Old daddy,
old daddy, indeed. The tests came out really well. So we're headed down that route at the moment.
Well, sure. Why wouldn't you?
Why not? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, sounds good. I like it. Ah!
Whew. What else is happening there?
What else? I wrote one thing down on the list today, and I looked at it after I wrote it down. I was like, I don't have anything else, which is kind of weird, but we've got a lot of, maybe I get consumed in a different way with, I mentioned before, we now won another, hold on, I got to pause. We are shockingly busy for our norms. Like we are now, if we go back like a whole year, this would be our second most job shop work in a year, you know, like happening in 1 month. Like we just don't, it's just trended, you know, down and down and down. And I'm looking for, you know, perfect jobs or things that just absolutely make sense for us. Not that we're like absolutely killing the product business at the same time, but it has been decent and going well, and that's our priority. So we just want another job. And so I've just been kind of like, it's just always amazing how much time coordinating with the clients, getting material, making sure you have the tools. And now at this point, working through timelines, like what are their needs? What is our schedule? Like, it's just kind of shocking how much that takes to do. And
yeah,
I'm not used to it anymore, which is just like funny how that used to be all we did. So just a lot of that lately.
Does it make you hunger for more product mix, or are you just enjoying it while you've got it?
I miss the income from job shop work sometimes. Like, you know, it's good, fast money. You know, especially now that I'm like prioritizing that to be definitively profitable. Like, I'm not flirting with, oh, I want that job just so we have work. You know, it's like I'm making sure that we make the right amount of money that it can be a distraction for us. But yeah, I have, you know, I'm surrounded by prototypes of products that I would like to be, it takes away from that time. And yet, maybe this sounds crazy and maybe you've listened long enough, but it's like the long-term value of one product, if we're going to start selling something, should vastly outweigh what one job shop job is. It's like, whether you have short-term or long-term thinking about what the hour you're spending is. And it was really hard to get to the place of being able to set aside the time to make a product, but versus needing the short-term money. But I know now that we have that comfort to some degree, it's very obvious that it's valuable. You know, a couple of years into product sales and trying to prioritize that.
Yeah, it's so hard to prioritize that time. Like yesterday, I had a bit of a win. In the morning, I got in and got into quotes pretty quick. Spent the first few hours of the day kind of closing out my quoting target for the week. And then was like, right. Well, and part of this, the focus yesterday was actually because I've built myself a AI business coach. I kind of plugged in a few years worth of...
What was the name?
Of what?
It had a name. You named Susie, it, I forget.
Susie, talking about that's the therapist I built.
That's a different one. Okay, sorry.
That's my Scottish therapist. No, my business coach.
Like turning into a polyamorist with like related totally. To your agents.
Well, I want them to have separate memories.
I have a few too.
They all need like distinct, clean contexts and memories to an extent.
Right.
Sometimes I wish they could share a little bit more, but anyway, I've built this business coach agent and I was using it in the morning and I was like, cool, this is what I've got to get through today. And it did exactly what I wanted it, what I'd hoped it would do. And it was like, well, you need to stop quoting And like you've told me you want to sell more product and get more direct product sales. So what are you going to like hit your quoting target and then what? Like get out of that.
Then what? Yeah.
Do some things that are going to help you sell more products directly. And so I was like, cool. All right. Well, I'll make the video about the thing wanting to make and publish that and watch that flop on Instagram and then do some work on the configurator because that's critical to the next step of the product. So yeah, little business coach yesterday came through with the goods, but dedicating that time to product activities is hard, I find.
So we were just talking about this today. It's been too many months since I've made like a YouTube video that's not like a stupid short, which I basically have the same thing I post on Instagram or something. And it's just so absurdly clear how much value there is, not from just a viewing standpoint, but it's basically free advertising in a certain sense. Like I'm not paying for it. The reach is still pretty decent and it may not have 150,000 views. I don't even know if I have a video that's that high, but YouTube is just so excellent at finding the people that want to watch those videos that often now turn into customers for us or trainees or something that is valuable to them and to us. And I just said to Ricky again, which I'm sure if you listen long enough, you've heard me say this. It's like, I should be making a video a week for how valuable they are over anything else. And I'm curious, I don't think you've ever, as far as I've known you, I guess, you haven't done a lot of longer form, meaning like not vertical video for YouTube, but I feel like a lot of your, they would perform pretty well. And I don't know if the reach would be good for what you want as customers, but it's not a whole lot different than what you're doing for vertical videos that, I mean, from my eyes, it's like they're so superbly enjoyable to watch that I mean selfishly I just want more to watch probably at home on my own time that I want to see more of your stuff, but it's like do you think about that in terms of do you think it would be valuable?
That's probably where I'm torn, is I don't know how valuable it would be from a actual sales point of view or even like a brand point of view. Like a feel like I don't really have an audience on YouTube. I've struggled to build 1,000 subs over the years, but that's from very sort of on and off uploading. And typically it's always just been re-uploads of whatever I've published on Instagram. So it's pretty much all vertical. There's a few horizontal videos on there. The only ones that are semi-long form are sort of product instructional videos and things like that. And I like YouTube as a platform, and I've often thought I'd like to do some more long form, like I'm sitting on all this footage of the day that I cut the flatbed router open and put a lathe chuck in it, and like
got
that sort of stuff unedited, and I've always thought about making a video about that whole thing, but yeah. I'd struggle to see the value, I guess.
Right. And, when I started making videos for YouTube, it was in the same vein as Saunders did, because I learned so much from watching other videos. Was like, oh, nobody's really done router cam videos. I had a hard time learning some of that stuff. And when I figured it out, I was like, I like the creative process of trying to make a video. So that kind of works for my personal interest in spending my personal time, basically, at that point, to do it. It wasn't like work time. And then over time, it made sense that it turned into a valuable business reason, too. For whatever reason, for people that were interested in router stuff, now that's potentially our customers, so obviously that connects. I get enough comments through messages and emails, or if I meet somebody that they found us, like I have a local Chop Shop client that just told me they found our videos on YouTube after we had worked together. Their company, we've worked for a year and a half. It's a newer person in the company. And they're like, I found your videos on Fusion modeling, and they're so helpful. And I'm like, that's weird. You know, like, I think that I can imagine, like I said, again, for my selfish reasons, but also I think there's a lot of value, and you're so good at editing video that I think it would help to connect people even further, or maybe in a different way than they have in your shorter things too, wanting to support you or be a customer, or, you know, whatever that format is, the special sauce of behind the scenes, or here's the history of the product, or I don't know what you choose to do, but I don't know, just thinking about it.
Maybe I've just got it set in my head. Maybe I don't know who's what I feel like, and maybe this is just my own sort of head trash, but I feel like my audience, the people that actually buy things, are not on YouTube, which is probably completely false. I feel like it would be great for all the fan boys and girls on Instagram who want to see more of the behind the scenes and the manufacturing processes and, you know, the way we work. But the people who are just, you know, buying a bookshelf, I feel like I'm probably not there or not interested in that, which is, I suspect, is probably false. Thinking about that now.
Yeah. I think it is. I mean, what's crazy is if you just go and search, if I go and search in a incognito window for topics or products of ours, often the videos from YouTube come up pretty high at the top over our Shopify posts. So it's, Ricky and I always talk about it as like anything we make for the internet turns into like this tentacle that hopefully leads back to our what we want them to come back to is probably our website or something like that. And so even if it's a stupid short video, like I had a customer in Canada send me a video. They had a multicam machine. This basically, it was your video you made when you first got the Dust Boot, and I re-edited it, you remember, a little bit. And I've posted that video a few times, and it was a short video on YouTube. He's like, I have this machine. I want that setup. Ah. Right? Like, isn't that insane? Cool. Like, that connection. And I was like, oh, that's our video. You know, like, I didn't know he meant our video at first. So anyway, I'm not going to sit here and hard sell you, but I've recognized it myself enough how ridiculous it is that it's daunting to some degree to go out and make a video frequently and how much time it takes. But like, man, it's usually valuable, it seems.
I've been getting into a good rhythm with them this first 2 weeks back at work. Hopefully I can maintain it. I'm already feeling the fatigue of like, oh crap, I need to make another video this week. Or, you know, it's been 2 days since I shot something, I need to make something else. But, you know, like yesterday morning, I had definitely had that sense of like, I don't feel like shooting, but forced myself to go upstairs. And because I've got it all set up now, I just literally just turn on the lights, put the SD card in and roll.
There you go. I've
made it pretty easy for myself. So I had footage within 20 minutes of forcing myself to go upstairs. So I was back down here uploading, you know, dropping footage onto my computer to start editing.
Right.
So getting into a rhythm, but, you know, then the one that I made yesterday has just got very little engagement on Instagram, and I find it really hard to disconnect from that and not feel crap about it. Having had a good little run for a week or so there of great engagement.
No, yeah, they were superb.
Yeah, and like that.
So,
yeah.
As your friend and, let's say, urger of this, what I think about when I see, what I've been thinking about watching you make these videos for specifically YouTube and could be TikTok, is they have such a short life, right? They don't, I see so much value in more people discovering those over time. And sure, Reels may continue to show them to people, but what I've seen is it just dies. Like, you get a week maybe and then it's gone. But even YouTube Shorts, if that's the only thing, will continue to surface those videos for a long time. So you're going to get more out of it. You know, some person's going to come down a year later, but that's what I was, you know, I have that same feeling, right? Of like, God, what did I just waste my time doing here that it's already like I have a video with like 1.8 million views and it just popped off in a day. And then
that's nothing. Amazing.
Just ends one day, right? So I don't know.
The YouTube feels much more evergreen, which then
it can change all the time.
Stuff. Yeah, I know.
On video, one last little thought. As I watched, do you know Linus Sebastian, the Linus Tech Tips guy?
That's a Canadian guy. I know of.
He did I love the Colin and Samir YouTube channel. They like interview creators and people that make videos and stuff, and I just like their style and interview. They're usually long form. Like this was like almost 3 hours, and Linus is kind of like the OG original tech reviewer, and I know it's not like really my cup of tea always, but he has such immense experience and knowledge of both making videos. And one of his tips that he talked about was, I have a rule where I just do one take. Like, not that I will only do one take, but like we didn't have the time when I was starting up because I was supposed to be doing like 5 videos a week. That I couldn't take multiple takes. So I just made it so that I would just shoot and like almost no editing because like we didn't have time. And I will do 50 takes of something because I can't say it right. And I think that's like so valuable that I need to like train myself to be like part of my problem and the fatigue of going from an idea to finishing the video is I have to go through all of my bad video or I just left it on for a while or like, you know, it's just overwhelming to go back through all the what's IMG underscore 27567 versus 8. I don't, what are those videos, you know?
Yeah, totally. Last week I did a calculation of like, it's taking me about an hour per minute to produce this content and I'm making 3 minute videos every second day. So that's a lot of hours and I'll get faster, but still, you know, it's an investment, but feels like it's worth it right now.
Yeah. Oh man. Right. I think they absolutely were. Can you do me a favor and put those videos on YouTube Shorts just to see if they do okay?
Oh, I will. I was going to yesterday and then.
Okay. Cool.
Something stopped me. Can't remember what. Probably.
Yeah.
I'm still using Opal that keeps me locked out of like YouTube and Reddit and Instagram like 24 hours a day.
At a certain time, yeah.
All times. Nice. I started reading Profit First again. I feel like it's almost been a year. I needed a refresher.
I could probably use that.
Yeah, I didn't start from the start, actually. I just jumped in about a third of the way into the book. And it's like, just good listening to it in the car the other day going, oh yeah, that I never did that bit of it. Maybe I should revisit that now that I'm, you know, have some maturity in the system. It's good.
Do you think that notebook LLM or whatever, that Google thing can make a podcast out of a book or is that like copyright infringement?
I don't know what notebook LLM is.
Google came out with this thing that like you can make a podcast out of anything. And so like one of the first original is like sometimes last year it's super realistic sounding, but like some early user, I think a journalist made a podcast out of Google's own terms of service. Like it just pointed at them, dumped it in and it's better than you'd expect. Like it sounds a lot like our public radio. And in that context, I don't know what you can give it for its style, but I was just thinking like, I want to hear Profit First again, but I want to hear it like a different way, you know, like,
cool.
can I have it rephrased? And that's gotta be copyright infringement, right? Like you're just taking somebody else's content and redoing it.
Cool. I'm going to look at notebook. I haven't come across that.
Oh, it's notebook.
Different
LM.
Ways of understanding information. Curious.
Okay.
Check it out.
Sorry, I interrupted probably way too much of your thoughts about Profit First. What are you getting from it this time?
It's going to help me. I haven't done anything about this yet, but I need to. It's helping me get over my feeling stuck about adjusting percentages and kind of just reminding me how kind of loosey-goosey it is of, like, it doesn't have to be perfect. You know how he talks about, like, don't fucking get caught up in, like, the fine percentages. Just adjust on the fly. Keep it, you know, keep it dynamic. I'd completely forgotten about the whole thing between, like, current allocation percentages and target allocation percentages. I just jumped, you know, in March. I jumped straight into target. I didn't do any, like, percentage adjustment.
I remember that, yeah. We couldn't have done that by any means. Maybe that explains a lot of your need to make transfers.
Yeah,
like, I think you've been doing that more than I have.
Yeah, making a lot of adjustment transfers every other week. And so, yeah, it's good to be reminded of some of those concepts that I just missed or glazed over entirely and sort of, rethink the way I'm doing it a little bit, make some adjustments, get, just loosen it up a bit. So, yeah,
useful.
And now it's profit time.
I'll just move that up. Yeah, I've, let's see. I'm restarting the year. I think I'm going to partially redo your... I've been using a modified version of your spreadsheet for that. And instead of continuing on the distribution record on and on into the columns indefinitely, I decided I'm going to make a new sheet for that so I can keep it a little more siloed per year.
Cool.
But man, it just helps to... It always helps to have more revenue, but I've had some pretty good distributions lately, which has been nice, where my timing account is almost perfectly going to line up. I adjusted it slightly with our upcoming, I think next month we have insurance due again, and it's like, it's almost all there. Like, I don't have to come up with extra money, and it feels like magic.
Good on you. That's awesome. Yeah, I'm struggling to generate enough cash this year so far. It's been deposits have been slow, sales have been a little bit slow. It's good energy, but, like, you know, I checked the bank account last night foolishly on the couch, you know, Thursday night, end of my week, and I'm like, oh gosh, that's not enough.
Yeah, that's
how am I gonna find another 15k by Monday? And that's not a great feeling. So I'll be chatting to Susie, the Scottish therapist, about that later. But,
right.
It is, It is. I feel like I harp on about it too much, and I find myself just wanting to tell anyone who runs a business about Profit First.
Same. Like,
and if, it frustrates me that the, I have, you know, it's the reason I didn't read the book for so long after I'd heard about it is because of the bloody title. Like, sometimes I struggle to tell people about it because it's like, feels like profit's a dirty word or something.
I told you when my friend Kyle told me about it, I said, Kyle, that may be good. That sounds like the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. You know, it's like, I don't know if those were the words, but I was just like, I do not want to hear that, you know. How can, and I think I Googled it and was like, how can you possibly even just set aside your own money before? I honestly don't know that I think about it that way. What I think about is, if I had to give it the most simple thoughts, I'm just tricking myself. I'm hiding money in ways that I don't see it, so I think I can spend it. And I don't think that that makes for good book conversation, and that's convincing to other people. It sounds like it's a false system, but that's what I need it to do. I need that money to not be what I do R&D money from. It needs to be for taxes. It needs to be for insurance in 6 months. Like, and it's working great. I think it's interesting to think about what's the next step of this. And I'm always trying to work my OPEX account down and, like, pay myself more appropriately and put more money aside. Like, I just want more money in, like, safety accounts, basically.
Yeah.
Like, that is the thing that I still am not getting to. It is.
Same. Yeah.
It's helping. I've got some of those accounts, but, like, the only thing I can think about and from my memory of the book is like, we need to cut more costs somehow. If that's not happening, if it's not, if we're not capable of that, then you either make a lot more money or you got to change the ratio somehow. And I don't know, Portland's not getting cheaper. Like, there's just employees aren't getting cheaper. You're like, could look at cutting some other costs again, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that's why it's been a good refresher in that aspect as well. Like, just a reminder to reassess that stuff and, you know, pick through the expenses. Actively think about how you can save money regularly.
Right.
Rather than it just being a sort of response to... rather than it just being only ever happening as a sort of, oh, shit, response to a situation or, like, becoming normalized.
Well, I was just thinking about what the difference has been in spending. And let's just say I go on Amazon and I'm looking for something we need or would be nice to have for the shop, which I would in the past just coin as like a shop supply expense. Oh, we need new Allen wrenches. And there's a big change that happened that I need to keep on myself. It's like, I just shut a lot of that down where it was just like, oh, we're reinvesting. I'm buying these things. That'll make us more efficient. But like all of that, just that adds up so much to like constantly be buying. It's like, well, no, we don't need a brand new drill press. I'm going to go find one on Marketplace for cheaper. You know, not that I would always buy a new, I always buy used things if I can't. I would lie to myself about that's normal to buy that kind of stuff. We need that kind of stuff, even though realistically the big slush fund account should have told me, I should have been able to know something different, but I couldn't see how much money I actually had to spend before.
Yeah.
You know, per month. So obvious the things, but I would say the other interesting thing is this other project I've been working on is going to be a separate business, accounts and such. And I am excited to start Profit First from the outset.
Day zero.
And see how it goes. So we'll have a little more to report on as that goes along. But
that's cool.
I feel like I've been to either a convention or jail or something and been like been fixed, you know. I know how to do business now.
We had a great example, just a quick
reincarnated
example the other day where John was nesting a job for production, and it was a bit of an annoying, like lots of different parts, bit of a fiddly one to nest in Fusion, and we no longer pay for the nesting extension because of reducing OPEX last year. And he came in, he was like, oh, I can buy like some Fusion credits, which will allow me to use it on and off when we have a certain job that come up. And we'd discuss that. I was like, yeah, that's a good idea. And then he came in the other day. I was like, I can buy Fusion credits. It's going to be about $500 Australian to buy the sort of minimum 300 credits or whatever it is. And I looked at the OPEX account. And I was like, oh, how long is it going to take you to nest it manually? It's like, oh, I don't know, 45 minutes or something. It's like, yeah, sorry. Can you just do that? Because
what about map boards?
Not enough in the OPEX account. Angled parts, like tapered parts, map boards doesn't do a great job with.
I see.
So, yeah, that was an example where I was like, cool. There's not enough money in that account.
Right. Yeah.
And we're about to run out of time.
Yeah, I wish that was less costly. I still think it's overpriced for what it is. But
yeah.
There's the note to end on.
Bloop, bloop, bloop. Wah, 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 wah.